Tango Tango Papa 2018, July 12, 2018.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Corning, California. So, I think it's been, I don't know, probably about 3 weeks or so since the last podcast. When I was home, I never got around to it, obviously, and then it's, you know, since I've been back at work, I haven't, you know, I just haven't gotten around to it until now. So here I am. So it's hard to believe we're already probably partway through the summer, and you know, we're already in July, mid-July actually. So time flies, doesn't it? It really, it's amazing how quickly it passes. So. I picked a load up at American Canyon, California. That's kind of north and east somewhat of the San Francisco Bay Area. I think certainly north of that area anyway. So that load goes to Portland, Oregon. And, you know, so it's supposed to be there sometime on the 13th. They didn't give me a delivery time. So, I just stopped here at Corning, California. There's several truck stops here, and I didn't want to have to try to fight to find a parking spot. So I went ahead and stopped here and went in and ate. And with the idea that I was just going to spend the night here. It was kind of... This is funny. This is where I spent the... I actually got here to Corning before this. I got here... on the 9th? 9th, 10th? No, on the morning of the 10th, I got here after driving all night. I got here at 9:30 in the morning, and then I swapped trailers with another driver. I gave him my loaded trailer, which was going to Clackamas, Oregon. I gave him my loaded trailer, and then he gave me his empty trailer. And of course, I was out of time, so I went ahead and parked, got something to eat, and then I came back out and went to bed. And I don't think I've ever slept that long. I ended up sleeping a total of either 14 or 16 hours, because I did wake up a few times during the time I was sleeping, but I didn't get up. I just kept laying there and went right back to sleep. So I caught up on my sleep. I don't know if I'm going to have trouble sleeping tonight, or I suspect tonight's probably going to be a shorter sleeping night, since I slept, the night before that, I didn't, I was up the whole time, and then, except for about 2 hours, I did stop, and I did sleep for about 2 hours while they were loading the load. I was down in Ontario, California, and I did manage to sleep 2 hours there, so I wasn't up, quite 24 hours, but I don't know if the 2 hours worth of sleep did me any good or not. I ended up with a headache afterwards, and it was actually a fairly severe headache. I am kind of a little bit prone to migraine type headaches. Typically, I'll get a mild throbbing headache. If I really mess my sleep pattern up, that's one way to get it. If I, chocolate will trigger it if I eat too much chocolate, or coffee will trigger it. And, you know, those coffee and chocolate are the two things that I know that, coffee will do it. I can drink a cup of coffee and almost, you know, there's a good chance I'll end up with a throbbing headache with the pre-migraine event and the throbbing headache afterwards, you know, mild throbbing headache. For some reason, I ended up with a fairly severe headache. You know, it got worse. After a while, it was, you know, I woke up after the 2 hours and when I was still in Ontario, and then I had a little bit of a headache, and then that got worse. But I took some, I took a couple of ibuprofen and then a Tylenol, and the ibuprofen didn't seem to do much. Maybe the Tylenol helped more than anything. But, and then I was even sick to my stomach just a little bit. Just a little, you know, I didn't throw up or anything, but I was just a little queasy. And, you know, that's kind of part of a migraine-type symptom. Typically, I don't, doesn't affect me that way. But in any case, I left Ontario, and then before I got to, I drove it was more than 500 miles to get here to Corning, California. And the headache went away, and by the time I got here, I was just really sleepy, but kind of drowsy, but at least the headache was gone. And then this morning I woke up, got up, and then in the meantime they sent this load that picked up this afternoon at American Canyon, California, at 5 p.m. So I left here and I got to American Canyon, to the place where I picked the load up at, about an hour and a half before the appointment time, and so I was there a little bit early, and then they sat there for a while, and then they loaded it, and so I got out of there and came up here. So I decided I would just go ahead and stop here. They haven't made a delivery appointment yet. They said it was going to be on the 13th, but they didn't make an appointment, so I'll just have to wait. So today was the 11th, and then we have the 12th, and then that'll allow me to go the load's going to Portland, Oregon, so that'll allow me to go most of the way, and then they, in the meantime, hopefully they will send an appointment time, and then I can go ahead and kind of figure out where I'm going to stop at. Unfortunately, the place where the load goes says it doesn't have truck parking, or no overnight truck parking. So I'll have to park somewhere and then go in and be there for whenever they say the appointment is. And as I say, hopefully they will come up with that, the appointment time tomorrow, the delivery appointment. So I've got three different voice files. One from Joel, one from Jeremy, and then one from Scott. And with the one from Scott, I think that's being the longest. But we'll start out first, I guess, with the one from Jeremy, because he sent that one about the same time that I was making this podcast, or the last podcast, actually. He sent that, and it was too late to include it. So here is Jeremy.
Hey Tom, thanks for getting back to us. I have a follow-up for you. I think I've asked you this in the past, but I don't remember the answer, but my youngest was asking what led you to be a truck driver. Did you have other jobs that made you want to be a truck driver instead, and why do you like that better than other jobs? Thanks, Tom.
Okay, well, thank you, Jeremy. Sorry that didn't get back with you any sooner. I don't know. Why did I become a truck driver? I don't know. When I was younger, it sounds corny at this point, but, and I've heard a lot of people say the same thing. It's just something I wanted to do, and I, well before I was old enough to do it, I wanted to do it, and that's what I did. And then I don't know, one of the nice things about being, you know, doing the type of job that I do is that I really don't have anybody looking over my shoulder, even though technically I do. They, you know, they track the satellite with the truck. They've got, you know, we have the two-way communication through this Qualcomm system, which is a, is basically sort of like a text type system, although they can send video, and they often do send video messages, you know, like from the CEO or, you know, or some of the different department heads will send video messages that might be several minutes long, and they're talking about this or that, and those actually play on this Qualcomm screen. It's got a, it's probably about a 6-inch, it's a, you know, 16:9 format. It's some version, it's a Windows CE, some version of, you know, some version is kind of a specialized version of Windows that they, you know, but otherwise it's just, it's basically, it's just a text type thing, even though this thing does, you know, it does have a kind of a Windows type graphical interface. But you know, so they are tracking things, but at the same time, pretty much if I do the job, you know, if I pick the loads up as I'm supposed to pick them up and deliver them whenever I'm supposed to deliver them, they pretty much leave me alone. And I can, you know, I'm kind of pretty well left to my own devices as to, as long as I follow the, you know, follow the law, follow all the rules, I'm pretty well left to my, you know, they don't, they really don't mess with me much, and I certainly, you know, and I, you know, don't mess with them. So I like that aspect of it, because I really, I've worked in jobs where, you know, if you don't have enough to do, they want you to look, you know, quote unquote, look busy, and that's maddening to me. You know, either you have enough work to keep you busy, or you don't. So, but the idea that, you know, we want you to look busy is pretty ridiculous. You know, or you have, you know, some boss kind of looking over your, right over your shoulder all the time, you know, kind of, you know, physically intimidating you. So, I ended up becoming a truck driver as soon as I possibly could. And then, you know, over the years, I began to think, well, you know, wouldn't it be better if I had a job where I, you know, especially, you know, where, you know, with the computers, you know, I thought, well, you know, because I've always been fascinated by computers, wouldn't it be interesting to have a job working with computers? And so I, back I don't know, it was probably around 2000, that's when I ended up becoming a computer network administrator for an eye clinic. And I stuck that out for about 2 years, and then I finally threw my hands up, and, you know, I got out of it. It was, I found it a very, kind of a very draining job, and it, and I concluded it wasn't the computers that were the problem, it was the people that I was working with, as I felt like I was being drained. And I knew, now, I didn't have any, can't offer any proof of this, but I, you know, it's just my own, I guess you could say, intuition that I acted on. I knew that if I stuck with that job, that I was facing trouble down the road. You know, first and foremost, probably health problems. And so I, you know, just, decided I was going to go back to driving a truck, and that's what I did. And I have, you know, since I did that, have not looked back. That was, I'd say, sometime in 2002, went back to driving a truck, and I've, that's what I've done ever since then. So, you know, and the conclusion that I came to was that I had, you know, a job you know, and maybe I can't, you know, I don't know. Like I say, I felt compelled to do it to begin with, but I had a job that I knew that I, you know, that I didn't, you know, that I could do easily, pretty easily, and not feel drained, you know, be able to mostly, for the most part, I enjoy my work, you know, and I figured out how to, you know, pace myself so that I'm not, that I don't get burned out too much, you know, so I stay out about 3 to 3.5 weeks at a time, and then I take about 5 days off when I do go, you know, end of the month, beginning of the month, and that seems to work pretty well. And fortunately, my company will let me do that without too much trouble, and so that works for me pretty well. But at least, you know, my feeling at the time when I quit the eye clinic job, the network administrator job, was that you know, I had a job that I could kind of fall back on, that I knew that I could do, that did not, you know, kind of suck the life out of me. And so I was able to just, you know, kind of turn my back on what I, you know, I tried the computer network stuff, and found that I really didn't like it. And again, it wasn't the computers, it was the people that in that, you know, in that office, you know, and it was, you know, lots of office politics going on and backbiting, and you know you put two people together in a workplace and an off, you know, any kind of a workplace, and you're going to have politics. And that's one nice, another nice thing about driving a truck is that you can be completely by yourself and just do the job. And you know, of course, there's politics that are going on at the company, but as long as they keep me busy and they keep, you know, the paychecks keep going to the bank, then I really don't care. They can strangle each other for all I care. As long as they keep me busy and keep the money going to the bank, that's all I care about. As far as my company goes, now, of course, there's politics that's happening at the places where I load and unload at. There's politics going on there, obviously. But I don't have to really deal with that at all. You know, once in a while, I'll have to deal with this, like a surly clerk, you know. That happens from, you know, on fairly rare occasions, actually, that happens where, you know, you just come up to some person and it's like they're waiting to pounce, you know. And that actually happened to me, I don't know. It hasn't been that long ago. I was at this place, and I may have talked about that in the last podcast. This woman was just ready. She was ready to just go off, and so she, you know, whatever. So she just kind of, you know, went off on me a little bit, and, you know, whatever. I don't care one way or the other. What, you know, if she wants to, that's fine. If she doesn't want to, that's fine too. You know, so, but she was kind of wound up waiting to pounce. And so usually if you have somebody like that in a workplace, then typically the whole workplace can be that way. You know, it seems to work that way where, everybody, if you have one person like that, chances are if everybody, you know, if they hired that person by accident, they're going to be getting rid of them pretty quick. But if they've got someone like that, there's a chance that the whole place is like that, because they just, that's the type of person that they end up gravitating towards. And so then you know, and there are entire workplaces where everybody seems to be just on each, you know, just kind of on each other's, you know, just waiting to pounce, you know, on each other. So, and they're just all kind of tightly wound up, and they won't smile, or it's kind of crazy. So, but, you know, I go to those places, and I'm in and I'm out, and they have to stay there. And, you know, and regardless of whether, the nice thing about it, you know, is, and it goes back to the, you know, the idea that I've talked about over and over again, if someone gives you a compliment about whatever it is, you know, you can be polite and say, yeah, you know, thanks, whatever. Thanks, you know, for whatever the compliment was. But don't let it go to your head. Because if you do, then that's the point. It's just, and it can be one little point that makes you vulnerable. And then you kind of, after that, you're bound to, you become a slave of other people's approval. You need other people's approval in order to, you know, kind of make yourself feel better. And, you know, and heaven forbid if somebody slams you or they kind of knock you down a little bit, or you feel like they try to trample you, then if you need their approval, you're in big trouble. You know, and then it just can, you know, some people, it just ruins their whole day or whatever, or maybe their whole week. But if, you know, if you don't imbibe the compliment in the first place, then when someone comes along, and they will come along, and they will try to tromp you down or whatever, that's not going to matter. You know, the thing that makes you care, the thing that forces you to care, is when you accept, you know, you kind of imbibe a compliment the wrong way, or if you resent when somebody does, you know, slight you in some way, or you think, or even if you think they're slighting you in some way, or, you know, or if you think you're being, you know, you're not getting your fair share or whatever, you know, that, those are, you know, if you resent that, or if you imbibe a compliment, either way, it's deadly. And it's just basically, it's two sides of the same coin. So, and another time I tried working in an office, it was a trucking company office, and this was back in the 90s, the later part of the 90s, and I stuck that out for about, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years, and then I was working in a what was called a driver relations department. And the phone just, you know, I was on the phone all the time, and it was just ringing off the hook, and the computer system that I had to work with was really slow, and, you know, it was, you know, I felt like I was a rat running in a squirrel cage, and never going anywhere. It was just, you know, constantly being interrupted, and, you know, I decided pretty quick that I didn't, you know, like I said, I stuck that out for about a year and a half, 2 years, and then I got out of it. So, but in any case, I am fortunate that I found something that I actually enjoy doing, and I'm not stressed out by driving. I can drive. Now, the only kind of driving I really don't like doing is, you know, like on, and I've talked about it before, snowy roads, slick roads, icy roads. Don't like that at all. That's the, you know, especially in mountains, do not like that at all. But otherwise, I can drive in, you know, through any kind of, you know, really super heavy freeway traffic, whatever. And that type of stuff does not bother me at all. You know, I know a lot of people get stressed out, and that stuff just doesn't bother me. You know, I might be tired. You know, I can end up being tired after driving, but at the same, you know, it's just more of a physical tiredness. It's not the thing where I feel like I'm about to blow up or really tense or anything like that. So, anyway, I hope that answers the question. You know, like I say, it's kind of corny, you know, because to begin with, I decided that I wanted to be a truck driver, and that was at a pretty early age. So, but before that, I worked on construction, you know, for my dad, you know, for a few years. And that ended up being a really, overall, it was a positive experience because it taught me how to work. You know, it taught me the virtue of working. And that's actually a very good thing to teach your kids. If you at all possibly can, you want to teach them how to work.
Hey, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here. listening to your latest as I have begun to prepare for an upcoming trip I have next month. My son's tournament this year is probably the furthest away it's been since he started doing this National Youth Open. It's in Dallas, Texas area this year. And I'll be driving from Columbus to Dallas in my new Traverse. So I'd be lying if I didn't say I was a little bit nervous about it, but just because, mostly because of the distance. You know, it's a 15-hour drive both ways. So we'll be traveling across a couple days down and across a couple days back. So it'll be an interesting trip. I've been to Texas before, but I don't think either my family, my wife or my son, have been down there before. So it'll be interesting. I just wish I had more time. We probably, because of the distance this year, we really didn't find out about the whether he had someone to bowl with until last week. So no one up here, he's like one of the few in his division and from our bowling alley that's going this year. So that's part of the problem. But anyway, I'll have the drone with me. I'll probably take as much drone footage as I can. Well, the one thing I'm finding with the drone is it's hard to find interesting places that I would like to fly to record video at, because a lot of the interesting places I'd like to fly at, I won't let you fly them there, namely national parks. I thought, you know, some of the national parks would be very cool, like if you try to fly it at near the Grand Canyon or something like that. The national parks banned flying drones. So, but you know, there's still lots of interesting places to fly though. In fact, the metro parks up here actually have supported drone flyers. They actually have at least one park with a drone field where I can go fly whenever I want to. In fact, I need to go back there again, and do another flight with better weather. The first time I went down there, it wasn't very sunny. Didn't really make for very good looking video as far as I'm concerned. It's just really cloudy and kind of gray and dismal. Not to mention the fact it was just the beginning of spring, so there really wasn't a lot of green around. Not like there is now, so take care.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. So by now, it's next month, and you may or may not have already made your trip. I don't know. In any case, you know, if you're going to Dallas, of course, this time of year, it's going to be hot. So hope that your air conditioner is working good in your car. And then, you know, whatever motel that you end up in, you know, obviously you want good air conditioning. Because it does get hot in North Texas, no question about it. It really can be hot. You know, and it's, I don't know, some people have been complaining about the heat this year, but it hasn't really seemed to be any different than it has from prior years. I think that in some cases the news media is trying to, you know, like they do all the time with weather, they try to make it seem like it's Armageddon or something. It's the end of the world, and it's not even a real heat wave or snow or whatever. Because I can remember, it was probably back in the 70s, there was an actual heat wave, and it, you know, I lived in, at the time I was living in Manhattan, Kansas, and it was, you know, there were several days there that I distinctly remember it was getting, and this was, I don't know, sometime in the, probably, it was either the very late 70s or very early 80s. There was a string of days one summer where it was getting, I don't know, like 110, 112 degrees. It was really getting on up there. And, you know, maybe up to 115. And there were several days in a row where it was like that. And it, you know, I remember that the heat stretched up into, at least up into Nebraska. You know, certainly it was in Kansas and in some other states. But it was, that was a real heat wave. But, you know, if it just gets, you know, typically it's going to get 100 degrees. Like in Kansas, you're going to have days where it's 100 degrees, 102, 103. That's normal. You know, and so sometimes you'll see that. It just kind of depends. Now, at home this year in Arkansas, it's, you know, maybe it's gotten up to 97. You know, of course, you throw in the humidity on top of it. And lately, you know, I kind of, you know, I look at the weather at home every day, a few days. In the past few days, it looks like it's just, you know, it's made it up maybe into the low 90s and, you know, what have you. And that's not that bad. And, of course, now I'm in California right now, and it was getting, you know, depending on where you're at, it was up in the 90s. And it's certainly down in, you know, in Southern California, in the desert area, it was a day or two ago, it was over, a little bit over 100 degrees, but that's normal. Those are just normal temperatures. So, but North Texas, definitely, you know, you're going to get some hot days, and especially in July. So, you know, if you haven't already gone, you know, be prepared, or you found it out. But as far as driving goes, that's, you know, I don't know. Like I say, I can drive for hours on end, and you know, I'm just not, for whatever reason, I don't find driving to be stressful, you know, regardless of what the traffic is. I, you know, I'm just not stressed out by it for, and, you know, who knows why. But I know some people can be. So, anyway, let's go ahead. That was Joel's comment. So we'll go ahead and jump into Scott's comment.
Okay, this is a comment that could be used on your past podcast, and it's in regards to the science fiction novels and they're being very atheistic and things like that. And often in this, I've heard you go on about the idea that that's just a story and the world is reality. And absolutely, up to that point, I'm on board. But the implication is made at times that God is provable. And I think that's a mistake to even think that you can prove God in any way, form, shape, or manner to anybody, but particularly scientifically. And I honestly, in my own belief, and I believe in God, don't believe that God would want to be provable. I think he'd be powerful enough and smart enough to prevent us from in any way being able to prove that he either existed or didn't. And I think he wants it exactly that way. I don't think in any way he wants to be, have it proven that he exists. And the reason is very simple. And in fact, this is dealt with in Westworld, which I know you've been watching. And it gets even more so in the second season. But the basic idea is that if people think you're watching them, they will act different. They will not act in an authentic way to what they truly are inside. They will act differently if they feel that they're being watched by somebody who will judge them. Whether it be God or whomever, people who go to church will often act differently at church than they do at home, and they may even be acting differently 100% of the time because they believe that if they don't, God will judge them wrong, but deep inside, the real them is there. And it never really comes out.
Okay, well, Scott, let me go ahead and interrupt. You brought up a very, very, very interesting and really it's a timely topic for everybody. And at any point in your life, you know, hopefully it's a timely topic. Now, the way I talk, you know, I'm not trying to represent, you know, science or say that I'm being scientific or whatever else. I'm simply talking. And I am personally convinced 100%, you know, that there is a God. And as such, you know, and it's not, it, and you kind of touch on the idea that people in church may or may not try to, you know, kind of put on a face for the other people, which that's fake and phony. You know, I'm okay, you're okay type of Christianity or whatever, or it could be whatever religion. It doesn't even have to be Christianity. It could be Muslims. I'm sure they do the same thing, where they sort of put on the face for each other, and then they pay the preacher or whatever, and then the preacher kind of smiles at them, and then they go home, and you know, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You know, then they, you know, they're one thing to the group, and then they're another thing to the, you know, when they turn their back on the group. Or they may, like you say, they may try to, you know, be a good person, but be, you know, kind of in a phony way. And when I talk about these things, I, you know, and it's a kind of a subtle difference. I really do believe there's a God. It's not a matter of, well, I'm going to talk that I assume there is, or that's how I should talk or whatever, or I should behave well because just in case, that type of thing. No, I'm convinced there is. And I'm convinced that it's not something off in the future. You know, you shouldn't be a good person because it's the, you know, it's off in the future. You're kind of currying favor with God, or you're going to, you know, you're going to set up your brownie points, you know, and hopefully have more brownie points than demerits. That's not it. That's not going to get it. That's not good enough. You can go to church and sing song and, you know, be a goody two shoes. All, you know, even in your private life, you can pretend that you're goody. But if it's not sincere, if it's not genuine, you're kind of wasting your time. You know, I suppose that has a, you know, if you're, you, that has some sort of value. If you kind of pretend to be, it may have some sort of value. You know, maybe it makes you an easier person to be around or whatever, or a more honest person to deal with. But at the end of the day, you have to be sincere if you want the, you know, you want the real thing. You know, so I can't prove to you that there's a God. You know, that's not possible. As you've pointed out on many occasions, it's really not possible that we're aware of, that God can be proved one way or the other. But on the other hand, you have to reason it out for yourself. I've reasoned it, you know, I've reasoned it out for myself. I know there's a God beyond any shadow of a doubt. The dust didn't simply become aware of itself by some strange accident. You know, or you come up with the so-called many worlds interpretation, where you got all these, you know, the different possibilities that happen with different universes. Each one branches off. I'm sure most people have heard about that. That makes for great sci-fi plots, by the way. If you're looking for a good movie, if you've got Amazon Prime, it's called Alpha. I think it's Alpha Portal, I believe. Alpha's definitely in the name. I believe it's Alpha Portal. That's actually, it's an interesting movie. You know, it's kind of interesting. It's got nice little twists in it. But that makes for nice science fiction, but you know, people are grasping at straws to try to come up with, you know, ways that we could exist. You know, and you know, because of our existence is precariously balanced in a myriad of different ways, and yet we, you know, as human beings, we keep coming up with different ideas as to how, oh, it just happened by accident somehow. You know, or we'll come up with, oh, we've got evolution. Evolution just happened somehow. Somehow the dust became aware of itself. Now, how does that, just happen? Do you put a bunch of rocks in a bag and shake them up for how many millions of years are you, you know, you shake your bag of rocks up and you're going to come out with a Mercedes or a Cadillac? Is that going to happen? I don't think so. I don't think you could do it in eternity and it's not going to happen. So what makes you think that the lightning strikes a pond scum and all of a sudden you end up with human beings? Or you end up with ballerinas, you end up with Beethoven. How does that work? End up with Bach. How does that work? I don't think so. So there is a God, but it's up to us to be sincere. And it's easy for us to fool ourselves. Very, very easy for us to, you know, kind of rationalize in our minds, fool ourselves. And I think it really goes back to we don't want to admit that we're wrong, or we have some thing that we don't want to, you know. I think it really comes back to, you know, having, and the thing is, probably it's right it's right in the Bible. It's right in the book of Genesis. Man wanted to be God himself. You know, man wants to play God in his own mind. And we can't admit that there's another standard for right or wrong. And the standard is our Creator. But it's not imposed on us. We have a choice. As human beings, we have a choice. We're the only creature that actually is presented with a choice. So, but it's a very interesting topic. It's pertinent to all of us. You know, if you've, you know, managed to find your Creator, that's one thing. You know, and if you've really found your Creator, then you're going to speak in such a way that it's not a matter of theory. It's not a matter of presenting it as if it's some sort of a theory, because it's not. It's a reality. So, you know, but on the other hand, if you're still looking, then I, you know, hopefully you continue to look. There's a lot of people that in this world that are pretty unhappy, and it doesn't seem like that, you know. There's some people that claim that they're searching, but at the end of the day, they, you know, it makes me wonder if they really are or not. You know, so I, you know, will try to kind of help people out if I can. You know, if I think, you know, someone's really searching, I'm gonna try to help them find their Creator. But at, you know, if I'm not going to argue with them, I'm, you know, kind of finished with the arguing thing. You know, Lord only knows, you know, how much I've tried to argue politics, and that goes nowhere. And you know, by the way, the politics, you know, of course, you know, the hate Trump has just gotten, you know, it's still seething and boiling away. You know, now they're attacking the, you know, they're back to the tactic of attacking the people that, the Trump voters and the people that work, you know, that work directly for Trump, that he, you know, that's part of his administration. They've gone back to that. That's nothing new. That's just, they keep cycling through these different things, and of course it all ends up backfiring on them. But in the meantime, there some of them are really programmed to be really, I mean, the level of hatred is amazing, you know, and I'm seeing that in some of my own relatives. And the level of hatred is just, it's incredible. That's not healthy, by the way. It's really not a healthy thing. You know, and it doesn't do any good to argue with them. I know it's easy to get tempted into it. I know once in a while I ended up getting kind of sucked into stuff. But for the most part, I've just disengaged from it. I'm not going to argue with people. You can't. You're never going to change their mind. You present them with a logical argument, and it just makes them that much madder. And so the hatred is just going to have to burn itself out. And, you know, that they've attacked each other. You know, that's what all this Me Too stuff was about. They started turning on each other. And but the hatred is still continues to boil away. And there is just, you know, they keep ratcheting it up. And it's just imagine that you die with that kind of hatred in your heart towards your fellow man. Because I'll tell you this much, you may think you hate a person, place, or thing, or whatever, you know, and you know, let's pick something that's bad, like, you know, we can all probably agree that Adolf Hitler was bad. Well, some people think that it's a good thing to hate Hitler, you know, it's a really good thing to hate the Nazis. No, it isn't. You know, because that, even that is the same thing. You're hating God. God created human beings. You know, you could say God created Hitler. God created the Nazis. You know, you know it's a perversion, obviously, but, you know, hating anything, the burden is on you. It's not on, you know, you're not, it's not healthy to, you know, to pick something and hate it, whether it's person, place, or thing, whether it's that you feel the hatred is justified or not, you're the loser. And, you know, so hating anything, any person, place, or thing is really tantamount to hating God. You know, as if you could, you know, a little measly human speck of a human being could shake your fist at your creator. Which is really quite absurd. You look at the scale of just the Earth, the solar system, or the galaxy, or the universe at large. And here we are, we're like nothing. Just little specks that have been endowed with consciousness. You know, and how silly is it that we would we think we could shake our fist, you know, and as if we were God. We're not, obviously not. So it's very unhealthy. The thing that these people are doing is extremely unhealthy. I would suggest I'm not even reading Facebook comments anymore. I do post things to Facebook occasionally through the share functions, you know, in these different, you know, like on Windows, you got a share function, on Android, you got the share function. So I post stuff that way, but I'm not reading the comments anymore, and I'm, you know, very rarely do I make a comment. I'm just not looking at it. You know, I've kind of lost interest in it. But the level of hatred is just amazing. You know, so not healthy, not healthy. And just imagine that if you have that kind of hatred, just imagine what would happen if you die and there's no more escape, there's no more distraction. You die with that kind of hatred in your heart. That's not a good thing. So that's all I can say about that. Anyway, let's go ahead and listen to the rest of Scott's comment.
Now, you could say, well, God doesn't care. He can see to your very soul. But what do you think would show authenticity? What do you think would show the absolute real person? To make them think you weren't even around watching them, you didn't exist and all that? or to make it absolutely sure and provable that you're being watched and your immortal soul depends upon what that watching reveals about you. I would submit that the better test is the one where you are 100% or very close to convinced that there is no God, there is no person watching you. This has been a part of this latest season of Westworld, where we find out, this is not revealing an awful lot, but we find out that the robots have been doing exactly that, the hosts they call them, to the guests in the park. They've been watching and recording every little thing about them in order that they know these people very intimately. And they don't even think they're being watched. They just think they're having a great time in the park, living out their fantasies. So what better way to get to know all the information you need to know about people than to put together a place where they can be themselves without judgment? Or at least so they think. And that nobody's watching, or so they think. So I think, my opinion, my belief system, God does not want you knowing or thinking that he's even there. He would rather see an atheist who is certain that God doesn't exist, but lives like a, words escape me nowadays sometimes, but lives the most perfect life possible. That rather than to see somebody who's pretending to be something that they really aren't. So a saint, that's the word I'm looking at. He'd rather see somebody who lived like a saint. That's where I was bound and determined to think of it. If you lived like a saint, and yet you truly believe that God did not exist, wouldn't that be the most authentic, genuine test you could possibly get? And if so, if you think there's anything better than that, then why wouldn't God want to use exactly that kind of test? Which is precisely why I think that God has designed things such that he is unprovable. And I know nobody that I've ever seen has been able to, in any real scientific way, prove an existence of God. And it's just not going to happen. It's faith. And that's what religion should be. That's what your belief in God should be, is faith. But I would argue that, in fact, somebody whose faith is that God doesn't exist, but yet lives a beautiful life of caring and authentic, realistic helping of the world, that is the kind of person that you want to bring into your spiritual material. Kind of like with human beings and animals, the human or animal you want to come into the gene pool is the one that's the strongest in the ways that you'd want them to be strongest. Unfortunately, with humans and animals, that means no morals at all. It just means whoever is the fastest, the smartest, or the strongest is gets plowed back in because they're the most likely to survive. And incidentally, there's another whole topic, and we call this topic two. What do you think about the idea of people today in some cultures who preserve the weak, the slow, the less intelligent, the less fast, the people who are mentally not as sharp, and maybe even have mental problems, and we save them, and we keep them around, and they're able to go back into the gene pool, and dirty it up, if you will, and make the chances that the next time there's a little more chance that you could have, there'll be more and more people with these weaknesses popping up, which was the whole idea of evolution, of Darwinism, was that you wanted to have the best be the ones that went back in the gene pool, the ones who could survive better because they were faster, smarter, or stronger, or all of these, variations of all these. So if you did just the opposite, would you not be watering down your own culture and making it more likely that a culture that doesn't do things that way will overtake you either intellectually or, you know, how fast they are or how strong they are? And can you see where that's actually being done in this world? And can you see what cultures it is that are the ones that are very primal and live more like animals? And then the ones that are very cultured and have risen above and are not living that way? It's a thought, an interesting thought. And you can get on either side of that argument. So have you ever thought about that? And what are your thoughts about how ought we be living? Would we be smarter to be more like the animals, or would we be smarter to be more like the more civilized that protects everybody, no matter what their problem might be? And is there a line to be drawn when you've gone too far? I mean, some people might choose a shade of gray on that as opposed to the absolutes that are in the animal kingdom. They might say, well, you got to protect a certain number of people, but when you start giving them examples of, now, do you protect this person? Do you protect that person? Where do you end the protecting? You know? If you find people more and more are getting more and more mentally unstable, do you try to keep them out of the gene pool? If you find people who are more and more deranged sexually or otherwise, do you try to keep them out of the gene pool? And so on and so forth. Or do you let it all go? It's an interesting thing. Well, there's something you can think about and talk about. Catch you later.
Okay, well, thank you, Scott. the second topic there. Well, let's go back to the first topic. The idea that you're being watched kind of modifies behavior. And I've talked about that before, actually. You know, you go, if I don't know how much you know about physics, quantum physics in particular, but, you know, you have the idea of the double slit experiment, and I'm sure you remember that when I was talking about that. And you get different behaviors from the light particles. You're getting different behaviors based on whether someone is actually watching or not to see which slit the particle goes through. You know, it's called collapsing the wave function, and you get different results. You get different results if, you know, when you're just doing experiments in general. You've got the whole idea of the placebo effect and the nocebo effect. You know, and so that's why they do so-called double-blind experiments with all kinds of different things. Because they're afraid that if they, you know, they're going to end up getting the results. I mean, if they're really honest about their experiment, they're very careful not to contaminate the experiment in order to end up with the results that they may or may not want. You know, end up with biased results. And, you know, so that's why, you know, all experiments have, you know, you try to do double blind type things. So the same thing is true with people. You know, if someone's being watched, usually you're going to get different behavior, although that's not always true. That's why I think that, as I've said it plenty of times, you know, like the texting problem, people texting while driving. Well, my solution would be make mandatory cameras be part of the black box system in every vehicle, private vehicle or not. Make that, you know, and have one camera facing out towards the roadway and another camera facing the driver, you know, so we can see what the driver's doing. That's going to prevent a lot of people from texting. It's not going to prevent everybody from doing it. How many times do you find someone beating their kid in a shopping center parking lot, and it's on video. That's happened more than once. And I'm sure if you go looking for it, you can find plenty of examples of that on YouTube. You know, and there are cameras plastered, you know, signs plastered everywhere, usually in parking lots saying, you know, video surveillance, you know, you're being watched, what a smile, you're on camera. But that doesn't end up stopping everybody, but it is a deterrent. So if you just imagine, and it is the case, but and this is my belief system, and I'm going to try to express this the best that I can. Our Creator is at the very heart of matter. You know, God is at the very heart of matter, you know, the existence of matter. You know, I believe that if he were to take his hand away, that the whole universe would just wink out and cease to exist. So I believe that God is at the very heart of creation that we see around us, including the matter that makes up our own bodies. So if you can accept that as a condition, then do you think God's watching you? You think God's aware of you? I think so. You know, and whether you profess to believe in God or not, at the end of the day, that part, the belief part, really doesn't matter one way or the other. As you know, whether you say you believe or not, the part that does matter is that you have to have faith in whatever it is that gives you awareness, whatever it is that animates you, whatever it is that brought you into existence. There's it's called a still small voice. And you can make fun of it and say, oh, you're communing with God or whatever else. You know, laugh it up. You know, make fun of it, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's there. And it's not talking in words. It's talking in the language of conscience. And we as human beings, whether you want to admit it or not, most of us, you know, there are exceptions, but most of us know the difference between right and wrong. You know, you can go into a prison and find a thief. You know, chances are really good that thief is going to really, even though he's going to do the wrong, he's under a compulsion to do the wrong thing, he or she's under the compulsion to do the wrong thing, chances are they know what the right thing would be. They know they're doing wrong. Most people do. Of course, they can, you know, people will come up with all kinds of excuses as to why right is wrong and wrong is right. Why it's okay to kill your baby. It's really a good thing to kill. You're really a noble person if you kill your baby. You know, it's unwanted. Unwanted byproduct of sex. It's, you know, really noble to do away with it. You can twist it. Twist, you know, and, you know, murder's fine. In fact, you know, if, you know, you have parents that divorce, well, you know, along that, you know, those lines of thought, you know, your parents divorce, well, why not just do retroactive abortions? Just, you got toddlers that are unwanted. They're going to, you know, not going to be happy. They're going to be unhappy kids, unhappy adults. Let's just do away with them now and, you know, prevent them from the misery. You know, isn't that noble? Of course, that's a twisted way of thinking, and that's where it goes. And that's the type of thinking that goes on. You know, it's really okay to steal from your neighbor. Call it socialism, etc., etc. So at the end of the day, no matter what you call it. You can call it God. You can call it, you've got to call it, you got to name it something, obviously. Common sense, whatever it is, the essence of consciousness, if you can learn how to, you know, stop and allow that conscience to catch up with you, the conscience is basically, it's whatever it is that gives us consciousness. If you can allow the conscience to catch up with you and make friends with it, that's really all that's needed. That's really all you need. You've got everything that you need right there. Because it's sort, you can think of it as a sort of a real-time method, you know, kind of a real-time ethical system, sort of a built-in knowing the difference between right and wrong. Without coming, you know, it's not derived from a fixed set of rules. You know, and that is ultimately what you have to have faith in. And it doesn't come out of a book. It's not to be found in a book. It's not to be found in a, you know, a building with stained glass windows and a smiling preacher. You know, maybe they can lead you in the right direction, hopefully, but that's, you know, chances are you're not going to find it there. Nor are you going to find it in a, you know, in a bar, you know, where everybody's kind of, you know, you find people that are worse than yourself, and then you feel, you're able to feel better about yourself because you find somebody that's worse off, and you don't feel so bad. So it's very important to, as I said before, to be as genuine as you possibly can be. You know, and being able to become genuine without fooling yourself, at the end of the day, that's the goal, is to really become as genuine as possible. So, beyond that, I can't say much, you know, because words just sort of fall apart. Mention it once in a while. Go to my website, truckertompodcast.com. Up at the top, there's a link that says meditation. Click on that link. I've got about, I don't know, 4 MP3 files that are hosted on my site. And give those a try. They teach you how to, you know, kind of the simple meditation technique. And, you know, it's just a process of learning how to be still and allow your conscience, which is kind of an integral part of consciousness, allow your conscience to catch up with you. And that's all that you really need. Everything else is, you know, just cake on top. But you, you know, if you really want to find that genuineness, a way to be genuine, you know, make genuine friends with your conscience. Now, the second topic. Let's see, what was, I may have to go back and listen to see what the second topic was. It was about, you know, kind of, you know, society sort of propping up the weaklings, you know, and that does happen. You can see it happens in families oftentimes. One parent or both parents, or but a lot of times I think it's one parent, will kind of prop up you know, they'll have a kid that, you know, that just doesn't do well, or, you know, maybe has crooked tendencies or lazy tendencies. And one parent will just kind of support them, you know, support that person. And then, you know, and then the one that does, you know, that actually is independent and, you know, shows some independence and what have you, the same parent will spurn that child. You know, and then that's, you know, they end up creating a lot of jealousy that way. That happens all the time. So it happens in families. Anything that can happen, you want to know what politics is, you know, anything that can happen in, you go to a basic so-called nuclear family, and anything that can happen that to go, anything that goes wrong in a so-called nuclear family can scale up and become politics. And so it's very, politics is actually pretty easy to understand if you just look at the basic family dysfunction dynamics. Then you can kind of scale that up, and it becomes politics. So yes, there are government programs that kind of end up supporting weak people and kind of trying to penalize stronger people, independent people. And that does go on. You know, we're not going to put a stop to that. It's unfortunate that it happens, and sometimes societies collapse. I think human beings, you know, mankind, I believe, has been around probably a lot longer than we know. We're really only aware of maybe about 6,000 years of history. However, you know, the human beings have been around a lot longer than that. And, you know, I personally believe that, and I don't have any proof of it, but I personally kind of believe, you know, am led to believe that... you know, there's been entire societies that have came and gone, they've came and went, and no traces left of them, and we'll never know about them. They came and they went. They were there and they fell apart. You know, were they industrialized? Who knows? Don't know. They could have fallen apart, and, you know, we would never, you know, enough time passes and we would never know. All evidence would just be, you know, could be wiped away in a fairly short period of time, on a fairly short time scale. You know, and there you go. So, but it, you know, it does happen that societies, kind of come and go. So, anyhow, thanks for Scott, Jeremy, and Joel for your comments. Keep the comments coming. I'll try to keep some podcasts coming. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.
Does your life suck? Is it a living hell to be you? Do you ever wish you could just end it all? Or do you have that pesky aging parent, nagging wife, or insolent brat of a kid you wish you could just eliminate? If so, know that you are not alone. Planned Parenthood proudly announces a new business unit, Planned Parenthood Death Centers. At Planned Parenthood Death Centers, we can help you overcome life's mistakes. At Planned Parenthood Death Centers, we believe that every life should be a planned and wanted life. Planned Parenthood Death Centers, coming soon to a location near you.
All services must be prepaid in advance, cash only.